Welcome to the program. My name is Jim Rome. Nice to be with you on this Monday, hour number three. And we are live. We are in Southern California, as we are every single day. Nice to have you here. The program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Let me remind you, the telephone number is toll-free in the U.S. and in Canada, 1-800-636-8686. And I've got time for telephone calls coming up. But first things first, we are joined by the chair of athletics and the executive director for Coastal Carolina Football, a two-time Big South Football Coach of the Year, an Eddie Robinson FCS National Coach of the Year, a South Carolina Football Hall of Fame Humanitarian of the Year, a Lombardi Award winner and a Lombardi Hall of Fame inductee, four conference championships as head coach. Coastal Carolina is undefeated. They're 5-0. They're number 20 in the AP poll. And they are at Georgia State Saturday, noon Eastern. Joe Mogley is my guest. Joe, it is so good to have you back on the show. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Great. Thank you. You know, I've always been a great fan of yours. And many years ago when you had me on the show, I think when pretty much every athletic director in this country thought I was far too great a risk to take, you were a tremendous supporter of mine. So I really became a tremendous fan then.
Joe, I appreciate you saying that, and I really was amazed by you and your story, and I was so eager to talk to you about that. In fact, Joe, I was going to start right there. I was going to say you and I did first speak way back in 2013, and a lot has happened since then. So people can truly understand, Joe, what you and the program have accomplished. Let's go back to when you stepped down first as the CEO of TD Ameritrade to coach football. What was that time in your life like then?
Well, Jim, you know, like when I stepped down in 2008, that was the financial crisis, and we were fortunate enough to have five record years in a row when we gave our shareholders a 500% return. By the way, there's no publicly traded company in the financial world that can say that, so I'm pretty proud of that. And when I stepped down, the board asked me if I'd be chairman, and I said I'd be honored to, and I just recently stepped down from that post. But because we had done so well through a very difficult crisis, I had probably never been in more demand in my life. And then I got a call from a group of alumni at Yale telling me at the end of the 2008 season there was a chance the football job would be open, would I be interested? And I remember saying, guys, I've not coached for 20 years. And I said, yeah, but we kind of know the skill sets a coach is supposed to have, a head coach specifically, and we think you have those. Maybe even, you know, we think you even have competitive advantages. There's only one problem. So what's that? Well, in 140 years of college football, this will never happen. So think about it. And ultimately, I really did spend some serious time thinking about this, and I decided I wanted to go back, and I met with Tom Osborne in Nebraska, and he introduced me to Bo. And then for the next 2 years, I became his executive advisor and worked directly with him and the staff. So that's how I got back. And I think the interesting part about this is probably the hardest job I have ever gotten in my career across over two decades in football and over two decades in the business world. And I think because it had never happened before, there wasn't a precedent. So there weren't that many athletic directors or college presidents, frankly, willing to step up until Dr. DeCenzo did it at Coastal.
Joe Moglia joining us. I mean, you needed somebody to believe in you. You already had that great self-belief, but you needed that one person because generally it just takes that one big yes. Coastal Carolina went 29-28, including 1-9 versus the two best teams in the Big South before you arrived in 2011. What was the potential that you saw in that program, and then what was your vision for the program?
I thought there were two things. I think, you know, every college coach says this, but there are two things we do that nobody in the nation had done. And one was we literally don't have any rules, literally no rules. But we have a standard. That's what we call BAM, be a man. But that's not some tough macho guy. A real man, a real woman, a real leader stands on their own two feet, takes responsibility for themselves, treats others with dignity and respect, and always lives with the consequences of your actions. That's not just in football. That's your behavior on and off the field in the classroom, and you're always going to be somebody's son or somebody's brother, so we expect you to live up to the responsibility to your family. So I thought, number one, first, that type of attitude, our guys taking responsibility for themselves, and the behavior was going to be paramount going forward. And then secondly, we were the only program in the nation that gave up 30 minutes of practice every week. I repeat that, gave up 30 minutes of practice every week to talk about things that had nothing to do with football, but things that were going on around the world. And that was LEF, life after football for us. And you know, because we have an election coming up, one of the things I'm proud of, back in 2016, we emphasized, you know, the role that we have in our country and a democracy. We talked about that, and we could only pray that our political and military leaders have the guts to make the decisions that they really need that are in the best interest of our country. And well, what role do we have to play that? Well, we can vote. And in 2016, again, at about at the time, 145 years of college football, the only program in history whose entire team voted on election day for the president of the United States was Coastal Carolina in 2016. So there was a whole emphasis with that. And then the football really followed that.
Joe, I want to be very clear about what you just said. It was in 2016, you took the entire team to vote in the presidential election. And not only that, you held mock debates with the players impersonating the candidates. You would routinely spend time with the players talking about non-football issues, as you point out, 30 minutes, like racism, terrorism, politics. Other programs have since started to do that. But at that time, nobody else was doing that. Why was that so important to you?
Well, I think, again, you know, we talk about, we know we need to win. I mean, everybody's aware we've got to win. If we don't win, I'm going to get fired. That's true of other coaches. We know that. And every coach cares about his kid and wants things to go well for them. But how much do you actually do in your own program, not bringing in speakers from the outside, not that counseling session with that the school has, but what do you do within your own program to emphasize that there are other things in the world that matter, and a lot of times they matter much more than football does. So if the greatest threat in the globe today is terrorism, how can I not let my guys really truly understand and learn what that is? Is the threat of terrorism in the United States bigger than our playing a football game? By a great margin. How do we protect ourselves? Through the military. You've got guys the same age as my guys putting their lives on the line. Why? So we can live in freedom and play college football. And what happens when one of those guys die? Well, number one, we want to appreciate what the sacrifice is. And number two, with those freedoms come responsibility. You go right back to the idea, bam. So I think that's the separator. And I think that on top of that, really, the football just follows.
Joe Mowgli is joining us. You know, Joe, when you look at it, you made the transition from coaching to the business world back in the day, and then you made the transition from the business world back to coaching. What did you learn about yourself during your return to head coaching?
Well, you know, I knew I had the skill sets and I knew I had the desire for it. But, you know, a coach puts in 80 hours a week. You don't get a day off for about 5 months during the season. Was I ready to handle the grind? And I was. But I think having had experience over two totally different careers under my belt, I think I didn't need to do a job because it was the money. I didn't need to do a job because of the ego. I wanted to go back to coaching because, and I think over the span of my career, what I think has touched me the most, Jim, is the satisfaction I get from having a positive impact on other people. That was true for me the first time around as a coach. That definitely was true as well in the business world. Most people may not realize that, and that's certainly what I felt this time around. So I think, like on my tombstone, it should say something like, "This guy had a real impact on others."
You know, I think maybe, Joe, you might have just answered my next question, but I was going to say you're not coaching right now, and we'll get into the transition. But you told USA Today that you do not go to practice because, quote, "I still get a little emotional when I'm around the guys, and I don't need that," end quote. How would you describe those emotions? And, Joe, why are they so strong?
Well, because I love those guys. I mean, you figure you have five classes. Four of the classes were classes I recruited. Three of the classes were guys that I coached. And, you know, we knew where we were headed. And the guys on the staff, too. Jamie Chadwell, you know, our head coach, somebody I recruited. His defensive coordinator, Chad Staggs, I've been trying to recruit him for a while. So, I mean, I love those guys. And so for me to all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but for me to step down, and especially in 2019, that was really difficult for me. In 2020, you got the virus. So, frankly, I shouldn't be hanging around different places, et cetera. But they're my guys, and I recognize that while I'm tied to them, I'm not directly with them. And that kind of gets me a little emotional. So, for example, during a game, in pregame, that's not easy for me to watch our guys in warm-up. But once the game starts, then I totally focus on the game, and I'm okay. But I still feel very, very emotionally tied to the coaching staff as well as our players.
All right, so in terms of the coaching staff, Joe, in 2019, as you mentioned, you officially hand the day-to-day coaching duties to Jamie Chadwell. You had coached against him back in the day when he was at Charleston Southern, and he had served as interim coach previously, and you know him going back even further than that. What did you see in him that let you know that he was the right guy for the job?
Well, number one, I thought he did an incredible job turning Charleston Southern around. Number two, he beat me, and not a lot of people actually did that. Number three, when I really looked at what he did with the program, I loved what he did from an offensive and defensive perspective, and I liked how seriously he took special teams. But what I really respected was, again, his philosophy and his concept of discipline. And I know deep in his heart, he feels incredibly strongly that, you know, we're put on this earth to have a positive impact on other people. And the combination of all of those things for me meant, this is the type of guy I want to work with me, and you know, one day would succeed me. And frankly, in a different world, in a different environment, in a different time, I'd be honored to work for him.
And Joe, for perspective, again, this is a program that started playing football in 2003, made the move up to FBS in 2017. I mean, I know you had lofty goals for the program, but did you think the program would be where it is right now, undefeated and ranked in the top 20 in the AP poll?
Now, if I said I thought we would be ranked in the top 20, you know, that'd be a little bit of a fib. But am I surprised that we're undefeated? No, I'm not surprised we're undefeated. I thought we were capable of that. And I think when we began, one of the things we had in our program was we didn't necessarily have a specific goal. Like our mission statement was different from others. Like, our mission statement was, we want to put a team on the field that Coast Carolina is going to be proud of. And that means we recognize you may lose a game here or there, but there never, ever be a snap that any one of our 11 guys on the field takes it easy or is not given 100%. So the idea was to maximize your potential. And maximizing your potential may mean you go undefeated. It may mean you go 500, but you're doing absolutely the best you can with what you've got. You make it better, and then you'll never be satisfied. In fact, George Washington Carver said that.
So listen, I get the sense that you're not going to be satisfied with just a nice start. You're happy with it. It's great to be a good story. But if, in fact, the goal is to maximize your potential and you're thinking about ceiling, like, when you consider where the program is right now, how much better can it get? What does the next level look like?
Well, I think, you know, we're only, like, hitting our stride right now, frankly. And what happened, like, when you were at the FCS level, we had many guys that were FBS talent that were very interested in Coastal, but they felt they had to go to the FBS. So the talent level that we've been recruiting for the last 3+ years now is certainly FBS type talent. And I think we have gotten a little bit of a national reputation from different things we've done over the years. And you have the compounding impact of the learning and the growing and the belief and the philosophy that takes place. So it's not like the guys that are there are kind of the guys that built it. The guys that are following them, that's all part of their legacy. So, again, I think we continue to be competitive, and I think significantly so over time. And, again, I have tremendous confidence with Jamie and his staff.
Joe, finally, like, I'm talking to you, and I mentioned that you and I first came together back in 2013. Like, you haven't lost anything at all. Your energy, your drive, your passion, your ambition. I mean, I can still feel the heat. I mean, at the same time, you are the outgoing chairman of the board at TD Ameritrade. You've been guiding them through a deal with Charles Schwab. Like, what's a normal day like for you right now, and how do you balance everything and find time for everything?
Well, when we closed the Schwab deal, Jim, which was only like a week or two ago, I was a little sad. I mean, I worked on that deal for 2 years, and I think it's a great deal, and our investors and clients should be very, very pleased with that. But, you know, I'm a little sad, in effect, because our name, TD Ameritrade, now winds up going away. But as I step down, you know, with the synergy, Schwab should be a $75 billion company. They already have $6 trillion in assets. When I started 19 years ago, we were a $700 million company with $24 billion assets. So I'm pretty proud of that. Over the span of my career there as a CEO or chairman. Now I am also executive advisor to the president of Coastal Carolina, and I am the chairman of an asset management company and a wealth management company called Fundamental Global and Capital Wealth Advisors. That and paying attention to what we've got going on with regard to football, and I'm working on a third book now on leadership. You know, there are enough things to keep you busy, but the reality is when you go through this period of the virus and you're not traveling as much, you know, frankly, you have a real opportunity to be a little bit more self-reflective. And I think that as the virus comes to an end and we kind of think of ourselves as individuals, if we don't come out of this tough situation not knowing a little bit more about ourselves, you know, that was an opportunity lost.
I think that is so true. And then finally, Joe, what about the kids that are graduating college right now? The world is so different and it's so challenging. What's the best piece of advice you could give to a young person who's going to graduate college and try and find their way in the world?
Number one, they got to know that right now the environment is different than what it normally is, but that's going to change. It's going to get better. Number two, when you're making a decision in terms of what you're going to do for a career, that's where you're going to be spending most of your time. You better make sure you have the skill sets. If you don't have the skill sets, no matter whether or not your father's there or someone else wants you to do it, don't do it. Don't go down that path. But if you do have the skill sets, I think, Jim, you got to ask yourself one more question. That's, is this something that I can do that I'd really be passionate about? If the answer to both of those things are yes, you increase the probability you made the right decision, and then at the end of the day, you're going to be happy. And frankly, that's all we really care about for our loved ones.
Coastal Carolina, 5-0, number 20 in the AP poll. They've got another one coming up against Georgia State on Saturday. He is the chair of athletics and the executive director for Coastal Carolina football, and obviously so much more. Joe, so great to get caught up with you. Glad we could have you back on the show. Thank you so much for making time for it, Joe. It's great to hear your voice.
I've enjoyed it a lot, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
You too, Joe. Thank you very much. Appreciate you. Joe Moglia joining us. An amazing story. All right, so we are open the rest of the way. 1-800-636-8686. I mean, the one thing to take on that opportunity, one thing to come back. They're a top 20 program right now. They're undefeated, and they're in the top 20. And he's had an amazing life and still going hard. Still going hard. Great energy. Great passion. When we return, you know, the one thing that I said that I would not do this year is go all hack with it and compare Brady and Belichick every single week, and I haven't, and for good reason. But I think now would be a pretty good time to check in on Brady and Belichick and see where the two of them are respectively in their seasons. I'll have that for you next, and phone lines are open. So there is no better place to get in on all the football action than with DraftKings, the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, every pass, every catch means more with DraftKings. That's so simple. You pick your lineup, you stay under the salary cap, and then you see how your team stacks up against the competition. Nothing adds to the excitement of watching the game quite like having a shot at millions in prizes. If you have not yet signed up, what are you waiting on? Get in the game right from your couch. Download the DraftKings Daily Fantasy app right now and use the code ROME. For a limited time, new users can get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes this week. Do not miss out on all this week's action. Enter the code ROME, get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes with your first deposit. That's code name ROME, R-O-M-E, only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
So I ran down my NFL recap for the weekend, but it did not include this. So at the beginning of the season, I said that I would not be doing weekly comparisons between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Every Sunday would not be an update on New England's decision to let Brady walk. I was not going to do something that hack where I would do an entire segment every single week to compare who won and who lost that deal. Because I'm not a hack. However, halfway through the season, it feels like now would be a pretty good time to check in on both teams and see how it's working out for both sides. Why don't we start with Tom Brady? Because old Purple Balls had himself a day yesterday. You remember that came up when he was talking to Howard Stern? He had himself a day yesterday against the Raiders. 369 yards passing, four TDs. He ran for another. I mean, he didn't just look good, he looked damn good. He looks great. And his first TD pass went to a guy that the Hood Man himself is pretty familiar with.
Here's Brady looking, throws toward the end zone. Caught ball, Tampa Bay, Gronkowski makes the catch, tuck it away from the defender. It's a touchdown, Tampa Bay, and Rob Gronkowski for the second week in a row has a touchdown.
That's exactly what he did. He ripped it from the defender. Just Gronk doing Gronk things. That was Tampa Bay radio. The Tampa Bay Gronkaneers. Man, the two of them are getting on the same page again, and Gronk is rounding into form. Then he had time to squeeze in another before halftime. Brady
drops protection, throws the deep ball toward the corner end zone. Scotty Miller in it. He's got the ball. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Touchdown, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Scotty Miller. Great throw by Brady.
Great throw, and Scotty got both feet in. That gave Tampa Bay, check that, Champa Bay, Check that. Champa Bay. A 21-10 lead. And then when the Raiders made it close in the fourth quarter, Brady got out his shovel and he buried them.
Brady rolling to his right, still rolling, still rolling. Those toward the end. Caught ball. Touchdown, Chris Godwin. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. What an answer by Tom Brady in the box.
That was his third TD pass. And I know what you're thinking. Yeah, Rome, we get it. TB threw a bunch of TDs. Right. But I want to hit every single one because these are all the plays that Belichick and the Patriots thought that he could no longer do. The throws that they thought that he could no longer make. Every single one of them probably hits like a knee to the package of Belichick. Here's one more for you.
Here's the snap. We did not challenge. Brady looks, throws a pass, caught ball, touchdown Tampa Bay. A dart thrown. Penalty flag thrown in the end zone, but Tyler Johnson has his second career catch.
Yeah, it's going to be holding six. On the defense. Touchdown's going to stand.
Wow. He's thrown four today. A four touchdown day for number 12, Tom Brady.
Again, this guy looks great. Great. And not great for a 43-year-old dude, but just great. And let me repeat this one more time. 369 yards passing, five total touchdowns, a passer rating of 127 in a 45-20 beatdown over the Raiders. That's how Tom Brady's day went. How about old man Belichick? How did Bill Belichick's day go? Not good. Not good at all. Tom Brady's Tampa Bay squad put up 45 points. Bill Belichick's New England squad put up six and allowed 33 to the San Francisco 49ers. Bill Belichick just got pasted at home, 33-6. That's the worst home loss in Belichick's time with the Pats. And it gets worse, so much worse. Because it wasn't just Tom Brady who punked Bill Belichick. Jimmy Garoppolo came into his old house and did it as well. Belichick getting blown out on a hypothetical scoreboard by Tom Brady is one thing. But getting blown out on an actual scoreboard by Brady's backup is entirely another. And it's not even like Jimmy G played that well. He didn't. But he didn't have to because the 49ers were busy running roughshod all over that Patriots defense to the tune of nearly 200 yards. They held the ball for nearly 40 minutes yesterday, and they did it with, like, I'm not even sure what string running back they're on right now. And then that 49ers defense beat the ever-loving crap out of the Patriots offense. They dominated the Patriots. They had four turnovers. Patriot receivers could not get open. Cam Newton ultimately was benched. And yes, I'm aware that the Pats have had some issues with COVID. First of all, nobody loves the next man up mentality than Belichick. So I don't want to hear about the COVID issues. Nobody loves the next man up mentality more. Secondarily, nobody cares because everybody's dealing with something similar. Here's a quick summary of the starters that San Francisco was missing on defense. On defense alone. Richard Sherman, Nick Bosa, Dee Ford, Kiwan Williams, Quan Alexander, Jaquaski Tartt, Jimmy Ward. All defensive starters, many of whom are standouts, and they still dominated the Pats. They out-next manned up the Patriots. And I'll tell you something else. That was a coaching clinic by Kyle Shanahan, a televised atomic wedgie. Shanahan turned the old man, the hood, inside out. Shanahan's on the road, on the other side of the country, with a slew of injuries and coaching circles around the greatest head coach in NFL history. Belichick admitted as much.
All right, well, we didn't do enough of anything tonight, really, to be competitive. We were clearly outcoached, outplayed, just out everything. So need to just keep working here and find a way to just do everything better.
Quote, we were clearly outcoached, outplayed, just out everything, on to whoever we have next, on the Bills. Yeah, that's the truth
we're
now.
Cincinnati.
Everything he said is true. They were outplayed, outclassed, outcoached, outprepared, outtoughed, out whatever you want to put in there. It's true. And here is another truth. The Patriots do not look anything like the Patriots right now. nothing about this group says the Patriots right now. Man, they don't do anything well. They can't move the ball. They're not stopping other teams from moving the ball. They can't score points. They haven't gone over 12 points in the last three games. I mean, that's some Mike McCarthy-level offense right there. And from watching them from the outside, you'd almost think there was something missing. Like, I can't quite put my finger on it. Something that's just a little bit off. Something they're missing. Something, I don't know, like a presence, a leadership, an identity. Something like, I can't quite put my finger on it. Oh, yes, I can. They're missing Tom Brady. That's what they're missing right now. They let this guy walk because they thought that they'd be just fine without him. And now he's lighting it up for the Buccaneers. And they look like they may, in fact, even be the team to beat in the NFC. And the Patriots look nothing like the Patriots. And all of a sudden, I'd even go as far as to say, they may be in a must-win situation against Buffalo. They're going to Buffalo on Sunday. Then they're at the Jets on Monday after that. I mean, the season's not over, but it's getting late, early for the Pats. And right now, Tom Brady and the Bucs are 5-2. And you know they're going to get better. The Patriots are 2-4. And they're smarting from that worst home loss of the Belichick era. The Bucs are 5-2, and it says here they're better than their record indicates. The Pats are 2-4, and it says here they're worse than their record indicates. So nearly halfway through the season, I'm not going to tell you who's winning that battle between Brady and Belichick because you already know, and so does Belichick. It's a freaking boat race at this point. The question at the start of the season was, who needs the other more? Who needs the other guy more? And right now, everybody knows the answer to that question. Right now, I can't even imagine how that was even a question in the first place. That's how one-sided this beatdown is. Like, Brady's out here stomping on Belichick's head. Somebody's got to pull him off him. Because Brady's going to get more and more comfortable, and he's going to get better and better, and he's going to get on the same page with everybody quickly. What's the upside for the Pats? They're not doing anything well right now. 1-800-636-8686.
They're clearly out-coached, out-played, just out everything.
At IronDadX3000 tweets, TB43 and Gronk are sitting back laughing at this joke of a Pats team. They are, too. They are, too.
Yes! Yes! So good.
And you would take Gronk a little bit of time. Like, you don't go a year without playing. Just being in shape and there's football shape, that's obvious. Man, Gronk is starting to look like Gronk. Gronk is starting to look like Gronk. And Brady's finding him. And they're rediscovering that chemistry they have, that connection, that rhythm. Man, they look good. They look really good. Raiders got beaten down. Who you got tonight? Rams, Bears. Who do you trust more? Who do you like this evening? Talk about the World Series, too. Do the Rays have another comeback in them? You have your phone number. Hit me up on Twitter, at Jim Rome. I'm working on that email situation. Well, I'm not, but somebody is. It's not getting done, but we're working on it. How about a Mike Tyson hype song? Maybe off the board for that one. A Mike Tyson hype song. Looks like Mike and Roy Jones Jr. are going to fight after all. Well, if they're going to fight, they need music to step into the ring with, right? All that's coming up. Don't go anywhere. ATP also coming up. I'm curious what you have to ask me today. I'm curious who's going to be the one who gets the question in today. But first, here is your sports update. Let's get to the ATP. You clones asked me a question. It's the Ask the Pro segment brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Good to see somebody new in here. Harold in Diamond Bar. Jim, you might not be a Dodger fan anymore, but are your sons. Thanks. I can answer that question like this. You know how I frequently say that I don't have a favorite player or a favorite team, that I do not root? I root for something to talk about. My kids are like that. They don't root for something to talk about. They root for themselves. So they don't really have a favorite team. I would say they're more Dodger fan than not. Again, in years past, when they both were playing travel ball and we had season tickets to the Angels, they were more closely aligned with the Angels. But we no longer have those tickets, and their mother is a hardcore Dodger fan. Like, Dodger Jim is not a thing. Dodger Jano is.
You sound like a homer.
Dodger Janet is a real thing. She loves the Dodgers. She grew up going to Dodger games. So I would say lately they are more Dodger fans, yes. We sit and we watch the games, and they're pulling for the Dodgers. So yes, I would say so. They still are bigger fans of themselves than they are the Dodgers, but they're Dodger fans technically. Technically. But they're not like, hey, what time does the game start? And they post up in front of the TV. They kind of come and go. Like, Logan will be like, oh, a close game. Yeah, thanks, son. I've been here for 2 hours watching this game. Let's see. 143C1 tweets. The only thing missing from the Patriots is Orchids of Asia being closed. Signed, Robert Kraft. Hey, Rome, I remember that Howard Stern interview well. I especially like that part where Tommy talked about Hog. Yours, Gronk.
No, you get used to it. I mean, when you figure it out, every guy's penis looks the exact same, so.
But you're saying Gronk didn't have, like, the biggest on the planet?
Gronk is... I mean, that guy's like a Greek god, his body, and that guy's just jacked up. So he's got a great physique. They still let reporters into the locker room. So it would be funny because Gronk would get naked and literally throw his towel over his shoulder and just walk through the locker room with all the reporters. And I would just laugh because, you know, Gronk, obviously, he didn't give a shit, but he's a he strut through.
Why not, right? Like, if I were Gronk and I look like Gronk, I wouldn't even own clothing. I'd just walk around all day long like that with a towel over my shoulder. I mean, why bother throwing a shirt over that if you look like that? I would just air dry. Walk around all day long, air drying. If I were shredded like that, if I were built like that.
That's what I'm talking about, baby.
And I'm not even talking about the kickstand. I'm just talking about how shredded this guy is, man. He's put in a lot of time in the weight room. Looks good. Yeah, I don't need to preview that one, Hawk. I'm just not going to read that. Assume that any tweet that comes through that includes the word crank is not going to get read.
Crank, crank.
Nick Foles has nothing to say about any of this. James Kelly, stop trying to text me like you're a listener when you're not. Thick Foles is not a part of the conversation. Grow the hell up. Stucknuts in. Did you knock Dodger Janet's car flag off when you slammed into her car? That's fair. No. She does not have Dodger car flags. And the only reason she does not have Dodger car flags, she doesn't know they exist. Or she probably would put them up on that sled of hers. And I would have knocked them off. Hey, Kelly, I don't need to see any bubbles coming from you, all right? Anytime we get into that subject matter, all of a sudden it's like dot, 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 dot. James Kelly all of a sudden is perked up. All of a sudden he's interested in participating. All of a sudden James Kelly's involved in the program. Come on, man. You have your telephone number. Last chance to get through. 1-800-636-8686. I want to finish one thought. We had Kevin Ioli on, but since I think I'm not going to have this opportunity necessarily, I believe Habib when he says he's going to retire. And the one thing I want to say about this before the end of the program, I've always said the thing I love most about MMA and the UFC, and I do love MMA and the UFC, and have since the beginning, not the very, very, very beginning, but early on. And I remember when I first started talking about it on the show. Alvin, you remember that famous phone call. When I first started to talk about it on the show, there was a lot of pushback. A lot of pushback. People didn't get it. People didn't like it. And I noticed and I sensed, and I'm not saying that I've always got this knack for this sort of thing, but I knew this thing was going to be enormous. I just knew it would, for any number of reasons, even if David in Houston was not having any part of it.
If you really want to see a slugfest, watch the classic fights. Watch Robinson against any one of those guys, Sugar Ray Robinson. That's real fighting. This is just a sign of how society is decaying. It's not fighting. It's two guys, they throw punches, then they get on the ground and hump each other. It's disgusting, Jim.
What an amazing statement to make. This isn't even fighting. It's two guys who throw punches and then get on the ground and hump each other. It's disgusting and a sign of decaying society. You're my guy. I love Chris Mannix, man. Like, he is a pro. This is an extraordinarily talented guy, Chris Mannix. You're my guy, Chris Mannix, back in the day. Had no time for it. He's an enormous boxing guy.
By the way, can we not drink the MMA Kool-Aid? Those knuckleheaded, brain-dead idiots that are watching those MMA fights.
What?
I can't stand. I mean, the MMA is not as popular as boxing. I'm sorry, it's just not. I mean, they make up. It's just ridiculous. I don't think it's as popular as boxing at all.
Thank you very much. We'll probably pick that up tomorrow. All
right. Mannix, easy, bro.
That was way back in 09, though. To be fair, that was 09. That was 2009. Great Chris Mannix energy. I'm going to go ahead and put myself out there and say that UFC is very much as popular as boxing. My man Mannix was only getting started.
For UFC 113, Machida v. Shogun, who do you like and why?
Yeah, I like me not being in front of the TV when that's on. That's what I like.
Chris Mannix is the best. Yeah, again, I'm going to put myself out there and say that MMA / UFC is every bit as popular as boxing. In fact, has lapped it several million times since. And I still love boxing. Love boxing. I love them both. They're just different. They're different sports. But the thing that I love about MMA and UFC is that the sport is so great and it's so competitive. And there's so many different fighting disciplines that no matter how dominant a fighter you are, you will lose. You will get beaten. In that sport, everybody loses at some point. Whether it's a fist to the face, a kick to the cranium, a flying knee to the noggin, or essentially just squeezing somebody until something snaps or they say stop. Every fighter ultimately meets their maker, always. Styles make fights, and there are so many different fighting styles in MMA that at some point everybody gets tagged with an L. No matter how great a fighter you are, even the widely considered GOATs of that sport lose. Everybody. So at UFC 254 on Saturday at Fight Island, Justin Gaethje was believed to be the Kryptonite.
It was like Kryptonite.
Like Kryptonite.
It was like Kryptonite.
To the previously unbeaten Khabib. And Khabib, known for that Superman mauling ability. And after UFC 254, I now can say with the utmost confidence, in MMA and the UFC, everybody loses. Everybody will lose except Khabib. Because he's on a level like we've never seen before. Without question, the most dominant fighter in my mind ever to apply fist to face in the sport of mixed martial arts. Or in this case, like he did to Justin, he choked a dude's trachea until he iced.
Ice!
Not exactly sure what the referee was looking at while Justin was trying to tap. I mean, he's like tapping fairly frantically, and the referee's just looking in. And the next thing you know, the guy's asleep. Like, he's unconscious. It's been nearly 48 hours, and I'm still trying to actually put this in context. Actually trying to process what happened on Saturday night. I mean, there was the fight. There was the post-fight interview. And now you got to try and figure out where his place is in history. What his legacy is. I mean, going into that fister, the interim champ, Gaethje, was expected to give Khabib his toughest challenge of his MMA career. Khabib, his pressure, his ability to maul people, had met his toughest grappling match to date. Remember, Gaethje was not a guy who could wrestle pretty well. He was an all-American wrestler in college. And the thinking was, because he could wrestle so well, if he could keep Khabib upright and then do what he does, apply damage to his face, the way he had Tony Ferguson, who's also a legend, we were going to have ourselves a fight. And Justin said he just needed to land some solid kicks to the legs of Khabib and take away his grappling. And then that would open him up to the hands. And by the way, he did land some kicks. He did land some kicks. I would even say that Khabib's legs seemed like they were showing a little bit of damage. It seemed like Gaethje actually did affect him. I don't want to say hurt him, but affected him in that first round. But then again, this cat's pressure is unlike anything this sport has ever seen. Like Kevin and I always said earlier, when you're coming forward relentlessly against a guy who can strike like Gaethje, man, that is supreme confidence. And he almost had him at the end of the first round. That bell definitely saved Gaethje at the end of the first round, but then he got him in the second round. And the way he executed that triangle was absolutely astonishing. Man, it was incredible. Incredible. So to me, I tweeted it, and that was not in the moment either. I mean this. I'm not sure I've ever seen an athlete dominate their sport individually the way Khabib dominated his sport. And that's some Jim Brown stuff right there. He's going out on top. He's walking away on top. This guy's 32. You have any idea how many hundreds, I mean tens, hundreds of millions of dollars he's leaving on the table? He's walking away in a sport where guys routinely fight into their 40s. He's leaving as pound for pound, not only the best in the game today, but I'm going to say the best to ever do it. And quitting, undefeated. And I think he's not coming back. With the Capital One Venture Card, you can earn 100,000 bonus miles that you can actually use. Redeemable for vacation rentals, car rentals, and more when you spend $20,000 in your first year. What's in your wallet? Limited time offer. Terms do apply. See CapitalOne.com for details. Now I'm done. Hope you have a great Monday. Thank you for listening. We had Joe Moglia. We had Kevin Ioli. We had Therese Paylor. XR4TI. Hey, clones, do a little more tomorrow. Do a little better tomorrow. Make a strong phone call tomorrow. See you then. We're out.